From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jemma Gaudette. It's Idaho Matters. Half American is a new book written by civil rights expert and Dartmouth history professor Matthew Delmont. It looks at American history in a whole new light, from the perspective of African Americans who fought in World War II both abroad and at home. Matthew sat down with Jemma to talk more about his new book. Let's take a listen.
So I have to say, there is so much history in this book, Matthew, that I never knew about. There are pieces that you know, I may know of that person, I may know a certain story, but so much of it is something that, you know, you don't learn in history class. Why was it important for you to tell these stories? Because we should note, there were more than 1 million Black men and women who served in World War II.
I think this is an important history for us to understand. And I should say, I'm a professional historian. And having worked on this book for the past 7 years, a lot of the stories were new to me. These were things that I didn't know at the outset of the book. But this is an important history for us to understand, because when you actually look back at that time period, understand the vital roles that Black Americans played in the military, particularly in the supply and logistical effort, understand the civil rights protests that happened during the war and how those set the stage for the much larger protests that happened afterwards, it really becomes clear that you can't tell the history of World War II without talking about African Americans. And I think even more importantly, the war looks different when you put it in the African American perspective. The war really starts before Pearl Harbor for a lot of Black Americans, because they recognize the real dire threat that fascism poses and the dire threat that the rise of Adolf Hitler poses in Nazi Germany. They're already raising alarms about this in the 1930s. During the war itself, the really important roles that they played in the supply and logistical aspect of the war changed our perspective on how the war was fought and won. And then at the end of the war, 1945 was the end of the military conflict. But for Black Americans, those Black veterans just came back and started fighting for civil rights. And so it really challenges our understanding of when the war ended. And so for me, this is an important history because it really challenged us to rethink this vital, vital time period in our nation's history.
Well, and also, you know, you talk about 1945 and these veterans coming home, right? And yet these men and women who fought and served, they come home and they are not given the same opportunities that their Caucasian counterparts, veterans, received. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because this goes into this, I think, whole idea of racism was alive and well for our Black veterans. I mean, there wasn't educational opportunities. I mean, there was redlining going on, right? And here they had fought and helped the United States win this war.
Absolutely. Reading the accounts of Black veterans when they came back to the United States after the end of the war, it's gut-wrenching. And it's heartbreaking because they gave everything to the war effort. More than 1 million Black Americans served in the war. But when they got home, they were openly disrespected in many of the communities, the white communities they returned to. They experienced explicit violence and attacks. More than a dozen Black veterans were killed immediately after the war, including some who were still wearing their military uniforms. And that was in large part because a lot of white citizens understood that these Black veterans were going to be leaders in the civil rights movement, that they were going to come back and not accept second-class citizenship status anymore. In terms of policies, the GI Bill was one of the most important policies in U.S. history. It's what enabled a whole generation of white World War II veterans to move into the middle class and move their families into the middle class. The way that legislation was written, however, once it was implemented, thousands and thousands of Black veterans weren't able to access those benefits. They weren't able to get mortgages and college tuition benefits and job training and loans to start small businesses in the same way that white veterans did. That was understood at the time. These Black veterans knew that these benefits were meant to support all veterans, but that they weren't having the same access to them. That was deeply, deeply hurtful to them. And it had long-term impacts. It's part of what fueled the massive racial wealth gap we see in our country today, because Black veterans just weren't able to acquire the same resources and build the same wealth to be able to pass on to future generations. And so understanding that time period, 1945, 1946, 47, how Black veterans were treated, but also how they fought back, how they became the foundation of the civil rights movement. I think that's an important part of talking honestly about the history of World War II.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, also you talk in the book about, you know, the rise of fascism, right? And how African Americans, I think even before other Americans, truly understood the dire threat of that. What was it like writing? I mean, you said, you know, you've taken 7 years to research and write this book. And here we are again at a time in history, right, where we are looking at such a rise of nationalism, and there is there is such division, right? What was that like to be writing a book that was set back in World War II, yet we see similarities today?
There's so many historical echoes between the World War II era and the present that it's almost mind-boggling as a historian. To cite just a couple of them, if you looked at a black newspaper from the 1930s, 1933, 34, 35, you'd see dozens of articles and editorials describing events that were taking place in Europe. They talked about the rise of Adolf Hitler and the Nazi regime in Germany, and about how this posed a dire threat, not just to Jews in Europe, not just to Europe as a continent, but really to the entire world. And they're making explicit references to how Hitler and the Nazis are drawing on American racial policies to justify their actions in Europe. They're saying the kind of treatment that Jews are receiving on train cars in Germany, being segregated on train cars, the theft of Jewish property, the attacks on Jewish communities, how that echoes very clearly what's going on to Black Americans in the Jim Crow South. So well before Pearl Harbor, Black Americans understand fascism as a real dire threat. I think one of the lessons we can take from that today is Black newspapers in particular were not afraid to call things by their name. And so if you look at the headlines or the editorials in these papers, they were explicit in pointing out the white supremacy that linked Nazi Germany and the Jim Crow South. And they were explicit in saying, we have to fight this, that if we don't fight this, we have no democracy left, we have no country left. That goes through, that sort of sense of urgency flows throughout the war. And so I think the other set of historical echoes I felt writing the book were these attacks on Black veterans after the war. I wrote the chapter called Homecoming that describes the murders of Black veterans in the summer. I was writing it in the summer of 2020, the same time the massive protests about the murder of George Floyd were taking place. And it just felt like being caught in a historical time loop, that Black activists at the time were using almost the exact same methods to try to call attention to these murders. They were publishing the names and the cases of these Black veterans who were being murdered in the same way that Black activists today were using social media to try to call attention. And I think the lessons we could take from that is that history does not move in a straight line. There's not a sense of a steady kind of march of progress. I don't know if we can find encouragement with this, but America was a very fraught place during World War II. There were more than 240 race riots and racial clashes just in 1943 alone. And so we can't say that the country was more unified or peaceful or simpler back then. It was not. It was a fraught country then. If we can find solace in that, I think we can know that what we're going through today is not unique, but that if we want to see the country take different paths, we have to make intentional choices to send it in those directions.
Right. And what side of history do you want to be on, in a way?
Exactly. Exactly. And I think I think looking back at some of those sources from World War II, particularly the Black press, there was a real clarity of a vision, a real moral clarity about what they believed America could be and how they wanted to fight for that vision of a better America.
I want to talk a little bit about some of the personal stories that you tell in the book about particular individuals. For example, Benjamin O. Davis Jr. We've heard of the Tuskegee Airmen, but he was the leader of the Tuskegee Airmen. Why was it important to talk about him in particular?
Yeah, I think the story of Benjamin O. Davis Jr. is really a microcosm of a larger set of Black American experiences during the war. So Davis graduates from West Point in 1936. And at the time, he's only the fourth Black man to ever graduate from the military academy at West Point and the first in the 20th century. But when he graduates from West Point in 1936, the Army has no idea what to do with him, because Davis wants to be a pilot, but the Army Air Corps is not allowing any Black Americans to be pilots. So they send him to teach military science at a Black school in the South. It's not until spring of 1941, after multiple years of protests by civil rights activists and the Black press, that finally the Army establishes this training base in Tuskegee, Alabama, to start training Black pilots. And Benjamin Davis is part of that first cohort and becomes a leader of the 99th Fighter Squadron. The story he tells, though, about that experience in Tuskegee, he was thrilled to have the opportunity to defend his country and to be part of this new wave of Black pilots. But it was still a Jim Crow base in a Jim Crow town. And so he described it as being hellish. The other personnel who were there, including Black nurses, ground personnel, mechanics, they desperately wanted to do everything they could to help the war effort, but they were had to defend themselves against the racism of the white townspeople in Alabama at the same time. It's not until spring of 1943 that the Tuskegee Airmen finally deploy to the Mediterranean, have their first chance to participate in combat. And then even then, they have to compete with their white commanders, some of whom still don't think black men should be pilots, who try to undercut them in their after-action reports and try to get the Tuskegee Airmen assigned back to coastal patrol duty. It's not until late 1933, early 1944, after subsequent military victories and combat victories over the Nazi air forces, that the Tuskegee Airmen, their skill in combat is finally recognized. And so kind of tracing that arc throughout World War II shows just on a kind of week by week, month by month basis, how these black pilots, these courageous black Americans, had to fight first just for the chance to fight in the war, and then had to fight against the racism of their own countrymen to prove their value to the war effort.
You know, one other person that you discuss is James Thompson, and talk to us about truly his bravery, but also this idea, as you mentioned, of calling things out, right? Of saying this is what is truly going on, and we must not, you know, turn our backs on it.
So the title of the book is Half American, and it's drawn from this letter that James Thompson writes to the Pittsburgh Courier. James Thompson was a 26-year-old from Wichita, Kansas, and shortly after the attack on Pearl Harbor in December of 1941, he writes this letter to the Courier, in which he asks, "Should I sacrifice my life to live half American? Is the America I know worth defending?" And that phrase, "Should I sacrifice my life to live half American?" it just really stuck with me in the years I was working on this book, and it's why I chose it for the title. The Courier was the largest and most influential black newspaper at the time. They used Thompson's letter to launch the Double Victory campaign, which becomes the rallying cry for black Americans during the war. They're calling for victory over fascism abroad and victory over racism at home. And so Thompson, when he's thinking about what it means for him and other black Americans to be drafted into a segregated military, I think he was asking a very profound question that it's hard to remember it now, but the entire military was segregated. At the start of the war, the Marines don't allow any black Americans to serve. The Red Cross is even segregating blood, even though there's no scientific basis in which to determine that white blood is separate from black blood. So the racism, the depth of hatred and discrimination in the country, it went so deep that Thompson had to ask, what did it mean to serve his country? And what I think is profound about that is, even given all of that, even given the depth of racism, Thompson and more than a million other black Americans served the country proudly. And I think more than anything else, I hope the book does justice to those stories of those black veterans.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing. These people were true patriots. I mean, here they put country first, right? They in the midst of the racism that they faced, in the midst of fascism, they understood this, right? And yet they still willingly went to war, whether that was abroad or at home. Why is it so important and I guess necessary that not only are these stories told, Matthew, but that we not only learn them for ourselves, but that our children learn them, that we understand this piece of history that frankly has been lacking in our history books?
I think it's important that we understand the Double Victory campaign, that we both talk about it, but also deeply understand what it was about. That Black Americans were extremely patriotic. They wanted to win the military battles. They understood that Nazi Germany was a terrible threat to the world and did everything they could to defeat Hitler and the Nazi menace. But they also were fighting for a better version of America. They knew that America, to be a true multiracial democracy, had to make some really significant changes. And they were equally adamant about fighting for that. And I think that's maybe one of the lasting stories from the book that I hope all Americans take away, regardless of their political backgrounds or beliefs, is that the reality of Black history is that Black Americans have been both patriotic, but they've also protested. So these Black veterans, they were deeply patriotic. They fought for the country, but for them, fighting for the country meant also fighting for changes. And those are important lessons that remain true today.
Yeah. I really appreciated the book and thank you. I know it was definitely it brought probably a labor of love to take 7 years to research and write this.
I appreciate that. It was a tremendous book to research and write, and I appreciate the chance to talk with you about it, and hope listeners have a chance to read it.
That was Gemma Gaudet talking with civil rights expert and Dartmouth history professor Matthew Delmont about his new book, Half American. It's out now. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Gaudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters.
Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.